as is true with the fish swimming in the sea, big companies get bigger by eating smaller companies. That being the case, we simply must ask, should Kroger be allowed to eat Albertsons?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1373rd edition of the Food Chain Radio Show. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down in Christchurch who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, with about 5,000 stores between them, the Kroger and Albertsons supermarket chains would seem to be big enough to dominate the competition for the nation's grocery dollars. And they were big enough until others with different business models appeared on the scene and grew to be much bigger. You know the names, Walmart, Costco, Amazon. Kroger and Albertsons, though with many stores between them, now find themselves becoming the little fish in a sea of big fish, and their business is gradually being eaten up by those big fish. To survive, Kroger and Albertsons have decided they must merge and get bigger. But should they be allowed to get bigger? Last week, in episode 1372, we asked Scott Moses, a food industry mergers and acquisitions expert at Salomon Brothers, whether Kroger should be allowed to eat Albertsons, and he responded with a convincing yes. Well, this week we travel to the other side of the town and for a different opinion and ask Claire Calloway, who is the manager of the Fair Food and Farming Systems at the Open Market Institute. So welcome back to the food chain, Claire, and congratulations on your new change of status. That's a big deal for anybody, and so congratulations on going from a miss to a missus.
Thank you, Michael. Very happy to have recently been married and happy to be back on Food Chain Radio.
Well, good. You know, when we last talked, it was way back in 2020, which is like maybe light years away, it seems, in episode 1232. And the subject was how the coronavirus pandemic was making it easy for big businesses to get even bigger. And during that time, I remarked that it did not seem fair that neighborhood garden centers, which were my favorite, were forced to close while the big box store garden center was allowed to stay open. And so today I would like to open our discussion on the merger of giants with a question. What does the Open Market Institute mean by fair food and farming systems?
Sure. I think what we mean by fair food and farming systems is that, there's this whole area of law that regulates the rules of the road, you know, how companies do business. And in the grocery sector, in the retail sector, in seeds, in meat processing, these laws have really been overlooked, overturned, underfunded. Fairness is a broad term, but some of the things we're asking for in the food system are pretty simple, you know, prohibitions on all different kinds of cheating, on deceptive practices, on using your power to get things that other people can't get simply because you're big and can demand it. Buying up competitors and reducing competition because you have big pockets to buy up the competition, entering into exclusive deals, you know, because you can demand it. All these ways that companies through, you know, whether it's fair means or frankly often unfair means have gained this market position can use it unfairly to continue their dominance. So a company that is playing by the rules, is following labor law, following environmental law, and is still perhaps efficient, right? Cannot compete, cannot get ahead, cannot gain those efficient economies of scale because other players are not playing fairly and flexing their muscle. Yeah. So when we think of a fair food system, it's, you know, kind of a open opportunity for the, you know, people to get ahead on more positive means of competition, ones that make more innovative products for people, more sustainable products, and provide better jobs.
And most of those advantages of being really big relate to the economies of scale, as you mentioned. And those who are small generally don't have any economies of scale. So they have a pretty much of a natural barrier to competition. Am I wrong? Those who are small really have a tough time because they have no economies of scale with which to compete. Whereas Kroger and Albertsons going up against Walmart and Costco and whatnot. So you have a battle of giants that really small businesses aren't allowed to participate in simply by virtue of the fact that they don't have the economies of scale.
Somewhat. You know, I think it's important actually to distinguish between actual efficiencies that come from being able to, say, fill a truckload of product by, you know, in bulk, by a bigger size, versus benefits that come from being large that aren't necessarily derived from operational efficiency, being able to have that economy of scale to do something in a more efficient way. And I think the difference between Kroger and Walmart is actually a good example in that, you know, Kroger has reached a lot of efficient economies of scale. They are a large, successful national business that can supply a huge distribution network, that can fill, you know, a truckload of product, which is the most efficient way to ship something. They can have their own, you know, private label brands. There's frankly large economies that they've already unlocked with this merger with Albertsons that they're, you know, trying to gain even more size. Frankly, the further operational efficiencies to be gained are quite small and marginal. When they say they want to get bigger to be able to compete with Walmart, what they're really implying is they want Walmart's power. They want the bargaining power that Walmart has to be able to tell its suppliers, you know, in some cases, Walmart is 20% of a supplier's business. That's not an operational efficiency per se. That's a threat to say, if you don't do business with me, sorry, you know, you're going to be making less or lose this huge market. And it's that power that Kroger wants. And so I do think it's important to distinguish between what is actually, you know, size that can make more efficient versus size to have more bargaining power. And those are two different things. And we actually have, we can talk about this more, some laws on the books that say grocers aren't actually supposed to use that bargaining power, that like brute force of size to get a better price. Yet they have been, because we haven't been enforcing those laws.
And probably have always been doing it that way. But it gets right down to it. When you have size, you have those advantages. Well, you know, during the past few years since we talked together last about, it was just 2020, that was COVID years, you know, it was really into an earth-shaking time in our economy and our society. And during the interim years, the past few years, prices of just about everything have gone through the roof. Whereas a $10 restaurant hamburger is now $20 restaurant hamburger. Wow, zoom. And everybody is feeling that pinch. So it's an election year. The White House has set up a strike force of the Federal Trade Commission and Department of Justice to fight the proposed merger of Kroger and Albertsons. Does the Open Market Institute think the merger of Kroger and Albertsons would be fair or unfair?
We think it would be unfair and that it would seriously reduce head-to-head competition in many important markets, but also create more highly concentrated national markets, giving Kroger more power to, again, be like a Walmart, to squeeze its suppliers, and outcompete other national competitors. And also to, in the market for labor, shrink the pool of specifically unionized labor employees, employers rather. It would really change the bargaining dynamics for the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, for their two biggest employers to merge. So from a just consumer facing standpoint, from a producer, farmer, supplier facing standpoint, and from a worker standpoint, we think that this deal has intolerable threats and support the efforts by the Federal Trade Commission to stop the deal.
Okay, good. Now, it is a political year, and has become a very politicized issue then too, because the people that Kroger and Albertsons must compete against have non-union labor, and the supermarket chains have union labor. So they have a significant disadvantage there in terms of the price of labor. So whereas Walmart and Costco and whatnot have non-union labor, it's a lot less expensive to run a labor force than if you have union labor. So there's a significant disadvantage that they have going there. But as we go into the next segment, I'd like to ask you, what has caused all of this price inflation that we've experienced, looking at it from a fair market, fair food and market system-wide phenomenon? What happened to us?
Yeah, well, certainly there were, genuine changes in the market that increased prices, and then some, I would argue, additional opportunism put on top of that, so the supply chain disruptions, the shuttered ports, the closed processing plant, increasingly ill.
All of those things, yeah. So those are things. Those are things we can pick up when we come back from this break. But first, I'd like to say thank you to Claire Calloway for joining us today. She's the manager of Fair Food and Farming Systems at the Open Markets Institute. We're talking about the proposed merger of Kroger and Albertsons, two of the nation's largest supermarket chains, who now find themselves fighting against even bigger sources of food that have even cheaper prices. Should the merger be allowed to proceed? Do stay tuned. We will be right back.
And now, back to What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, looking back over 4 years since we last had Claire Calloway on our Food Chain Radio program, it was the COVID years, and really weird things were happening to our economy and to our way of doing business and the whole works. I remember at the time, I could not go to my local garden center, which should have been a thing that everybody could do, but the only garden center that was allowed to be open in town was the big box store garden center, which was a pretty good deal for the big box store garden center because they got all the business and everybody, all people really wanted to do was go out and garden. So, and I guess when you talk about fairness, that's a perfect example of what is seemingly not so fair, that you would close all the little guys and leave the big guys open. And it seems to me, Claire Kellaway, that that is a pretty good example of one of the biggest economies of scale, is when you get big enough, you can afford to encourage government to do things your way, because you have enough money to contribute to political campaigns and blah, 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 blah. So there you are. You have the big box stores, garden centers open, and all the little ones are closed. And so that's kind of how I see things as being unfair, is that if we were to give governments the power to decide what can live and what must die, it will always go to those who have the most money to contribute to the government, and there you go. So in looking at Kroger and Albertsons, they find themselves now in a competitive situation where they're not big enough, or at least they think they're not big enough. And if the government were to find that their merger must be squelched, then they must compete on their own against Walmart, which has much bigger economies of scale. So it seems to me that's unfair, too.
I would contend that Kroger and Albertsons are big enough that in the grand scheme of things, with actually reaching genuine operational efficiency, they've reached them. I think if you want to make the market more fair, you should, or the government should be enforcing laws like the Robinson-Patman Act, which says that grocers and other big buyers can't get a better price simply because they're bigger, that any differences in price that chains get has to actually be based in operational efficiencies, like being able to fill a truck. It definitely makes sense. If you're a buyer that can buy in an efficient quantity and that lowers the shipping cost per item, a discount is absolutely warranted. If you are a big company like Walmart that says you need to give me a discount because you rely on my outlet for most of your business, that's an unfair discount and should not be allowed. And I think if those laws are enforced, then Kroger's rationale for this merger pretty much falls apart. You know, Kroger otherwise has all the other operational efficiencies it could need to absolutely compete with Walmart. The other thing we know is that there are times when Kroger currently can compete with Walmart's pricing, but chooses not to. And this is something that the Federal Trade Commission's lawsuit and trial against Kroger and Albertsons has revealed. Kroger is filling a certain niche in the grocery market. It is not actually trying to be an everyday low price retailer like Walmart or Costco. It's filling a different niche of the high-low, more coupon-based retailer. And the pricing that it actually cares about when it determines its, you know, pricing day to day is competitors like Albertsons. There's been evidence that came out in the trial that there were weeks when Kroger actually was able to lower its egg prices, for instance, to the same level as Walmart. But local executives chose to actually maintain their prices and make more money because Albertsons stores hadn't lowered their egg prices. Mm-hmm. So this shows if that direct head-to-head competition between Kroger and Albertsons is reduced by Kroger taking over Albertsons, it's going to take those opportunities when it actually does have the efficiencies already to at times offer Walmart-like prices, but it chooses not to. And so I think that's one of the big, you know, that and then the unfair pricing that Walmart's able to gain by unenforcement of the Robinson-Patman Act are, I think, the real issues that we should be looking at in the grocery market.
You know, the interesting thing about what you said about low prices and not being able to offer lower prices by virtue of the other kinds of efficiencies you can gain from economies of scale, not related to the efficiency of delivering groceries. And I just think if somebody's really big, like Walmart, and gains those efficiencies by other means, if they are not allowed to offer lower prices, isn't that then unfair to consumers who will not be able to realize the cheaper prices?
No, it'll hopefully create more options for consumers because you will have other competitors that will be able to lower their prices and get their goods at a more fair level because you have suppliers that aren't, making excess concessions to their biggest vendors at the expense of all their other customers. I think, the pandemic is a good example of this. There was a time when, a lot of goods were coming in at 80% in full and on time. There were, not extreme shortages, but significant shortages of certain goods. At this time, Walmart demanded that its suppliers pay over 90% on time and in full, or otherwise pay a 3% fee. That's something that really only Walmart could demand, because these suppliers are so dependent on it for their business. Mm-hmm. And they can't afford to pay that 3% fee on a huge portion of their goods. If a smaller vendor asks for that fee, they might be willing to pay it, right? Because just the dollars don't add up when you're feeding one of your your lesser customers, even if they're a fully efficient, scaled customer. And so because of this, we saw that Walmart got priority for a lot of products where smaller regional stores even had even worse shortages because products were being prioritized for Walmart and shorted, even more right. regionally. That meant that customers who maybe wanted to shop at a local independent store or even a regional store like a Kroger and Albertsons were pushed to Walmart because Walmart had more in stock than the local suppliers. That same metaphor can go for prices, right? Walmart has these, ultra, below cost prices, right. frankly, that it's gaining in an unfair way. If more vendors were able to, vendors can already join forces to fill trucks, to buy buying cooperatives, to buy in an efficient manner. If they were able to then realize the full cost savings of that and offer more fair prices, then you would see just more even prices across the board instead of this huge price difference between Walmart and everyone else. It would make it so that companies are competing on other things like service and variety and local control, response to their local community, instead of just being the biggest and right. being able to demand the most excessive terms. I think on the whole, it would make for a more fair playing field for all different kinds of businesses.
Okay. Well, I've never been a big fan of big. I've always been a big fan of small and local. So when I look at these giants battling it out, I scratch my head and wonder, since we talked and since we came out of COVID and kind of into a very potent political period, and here we are at the peak of that political period with an election year, and we're all concerned about food inflation, because like I said, the $10 restaurant burger is now $20, and don't order a drink or watch out for the check when it comes with the how much tip do you want to leave, and pretty soon the $20 hamburger is $50. So everything is hugely expensive. And it's an election year. So we look at the federal government and the White House has actually established a strike force of the FTC and the Department of Justice to do what it can to stop this merger. And I wonder if I don't know, that seems to be a bit unfair too, to have the entire federal government come after you.
I think that the federal government's enforcing the law, and if you want fair markets, then you need to enforce the law when companies break it.
Okay.
And otherwise, what's the point of having rules? And I think having these rules that say companies cannot buy their competitors if it gives them an unfair advantage need to be enforced. And the problem is they haven't been enforced for many decades. So yes, there's a catch-up period now when companies are, you know, facing accountability, but just because they haven't for many decades doesn't mean they shouldn't. I think it's past time that these laws were enforced. And I think that the trend of increased antitrust enforcement that has happened under the Biden administration, frankly, predates the increased political focus on food prices. I think that's a little unfair to insinuate that it's a political motivation that this grocery store is facing scrutiny. This merger is the biggest grocery store merger in many years. I mean, we have the two largest standalone grocery chains are merging. Under any political administration, I would hope that this is the kind of deal that would raise alarm bells for antitrust law. If this deal, frankly, does not raise scrutiny for antitrust law, then, like, I don't know what does.
Okay. Good. And then, you know, we talked about the unfair ways companies were able to lower their prices. Now, was Walmart able to get away with lowering its prices because nobody was enforcing the rules? Is that what you seem to be insinuating, that nobody is enforcing the rules? And during that time, Walmart grew to be a giant company. Was that what happened? Was that they had kind of like a fair, free playing field to do what they wished?
Absolutely. So the Robinson-Patman Act that prohibits price discrimination and getting a better price, you know, simply because of your bargaining clout, was passed in, I believe, the 50s, but around the 70s, antitrust enforcers and at the federal level and private, you know, scholars and lawyers and economists had a change of heart and a change of philosophy around the law. The DOJ actually said they're no longer going to enforce the law. The FTC technically retained authority to enforce this law, but effectively stopped. So yes, this law was enforced for a period of time in the 50s through 70s, and then for the past, you know, 50 years has essentially been left on the shelf. Walmart came into the grocery scene in the 90s, right at the peak of when this law basically went dormant, and arguably made their business model around exploiting this loophole in the law. I do not think we would have the Walmart we have today if this law had been enforced.
Do you think Walmart should be broken up?
It's interesting because Walmart actually, it got its size, again, primarily through skirting this law, right? Through abusing its buyer power. Some chains, you know, Kroger, Albertsons got really large through mergers. They've been buying competitors for decades.
Right.
Walmart is an interesting exception. They actually didn't get to their size through mergers. So when you look at breaking up a company, the easiest way is to look at unwinding a merger, arguing that a merger in the past was anti-competitive and shouldn't have been permitted. And you don't really have that clean example with Walmart. That's not to say that there aren't arguments that they have excessive market power. And, you know, like Standard Oil and AT&T, you know,
sure,
we've broken up companies before. But I do think the first step is definitely enforcing the Robinson-Patman Act, and then perhaps seeing if a structural remedy is necessary from there.
Well, good. When we come, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'd like to ask our guest, who is Claire Kellaway from the Open Markets Institute, how we could go about fairly managing competition. Is there a way to do that? Because that seems to be the case on the table with respect to the Kroger and Albertsons proposed merger. Kroger and Albertsons are saying, we must merge or die. But others are saying, no, you must not merge. You must compete as you are. So do stay tuned. We'll look for a fair way of managing this.
So much to say, so little time to say it, on The Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're talking about fish swimming in the sea, so to speak. We're talking about grocery chains competing against each other for our grocery dollar. Right now, Kroger wants to eat up Albertsons and become a 5,000-store behemoth that will pretty much control the supermarket industry. However, the federal government wants to step in and prevent this merger. What we see of the supermarket industry, or at least this is what Kroger and Albertsons are claiming, is that it's not as dominant as it once was because people are shopping elsewhere for most of their food. And we're talking about the big ones like Walmart, Costco, Amazon, and so on. The supermarkets simply do not have the focal point being the center of our community like they once were. And that's certainly true in my neighborhood. I have a small supermarket, and right across the street there's a discount supermarket. And right across the street the other way, there's a natural food store. And then right down the street from that, there's Whole Foods. And so there are so many. And then, of course, if you drive 1 mile away, there's Costco. So the supermarket in that milieu, it just isn't what it used to be anymore. And it's so easy to pick alternatives. So that's why I think this proposed merger is really interesting, because the supermarket simply doesn't have the ability to control much of anything. And so the only thing they can do is get the lowest possible prices. Is there a fair way to manage this competition and the efforts to merge and break up and go bankrupt? And isn't it the best way to just let it all roll, Claire Kellaway?
No, I don't think that letting companies get infinitely bigger to monopoly is the way to ensure fair prices. You know, I would argue in this example you just shared, Kroger and Albertsons in particular, you know, they're, I don't know, I would say in a lot of ways they're doing better than they are, you know, telling in their efforts to merge. To the extent that Albertsons has been struggling, it's been in part because they've been owned by private equity investors who have been really sucking the company dry, doing frankly, not smart things like selling the real estate from under the stores and leasing it back to the company.
Cashing it in, right. Yeah.
You know, these are things that have put Albertsons in a bad position. But, you know, in terms of having a lot of business, you know, competing with some of these specialty stores, they're doing quite well. And as much as, you know, they like to talk about how much people shop at Costco, for instance, we know that on the day-to-day, people tend to make more specialty big trips to Costco, and tend to get their daily groceries from a Kroger and Albertsons. They're kind of competing for different customers and different occasions, frankly. So all that, you know, point being, we see even in the economy as it exists, ways that Kroger and Albertsons are competing unfairly, raising prices beyond competitive levels to make excess profit at the very same time that they're claiming, you know, they need to lower their prices to compete with Walmart. I mentioned this earlier in the program, but the FTC's trial against Kroger has revealed that there are times when Kroger actually has the ability to compete with Walmart on pricing, but chooses not to because it's trying to compete more with Albertsons and be close to their level of pricing. So I just think a lot of what these companies are arguing shouldn't be taken at face value when you kind of dig into the next level of how they're operating and the ways that they are currently able to actually do quite well for themselves and are already arguably too big, let alone allowing them to merge. So the kind of things that could make this all more fair is actually promoting more competition. Right now, we know that Albertsons is keeping Kroger in check to some extent. They're really looking at each other for pricing. Shrinking that even further is going to give Kroger even more power to demand the lowest possible prices from suppliers, but charge whatever it wants to consumers. I don't think we should assume that because Kroger could possibly be able to extract lower prices, that it will necessarily always pass those on to consumers.
You know, that's a good point, Claire. When the big boom in inflation started raising prices like crazy, I looked around the local economy, and it seemed to me like everybody came to the conclusion that inflation was here. So therefore, I'm going to raise my prices to this point where people will stop buying my stuff. And so the prices went up to the point where people stopped buying the stuff. Mm-hmm. And so they make it a lot of money, and people see, look at that and say, hey, they're making a lot of money. Maybe I should do that too. And there you go. Mm-hmm. That's how competition works. Now, if I look at the Kroger-Albertsons situation, and when it comes right down to it, I guess I do shop at a Albertsons because I shop at a Safeway, which mm-hmm. I think is now, right. Yeah, so, and that's consolidation. All mm-hmm. of the food comes from two places almost anymore. It seems to me if we prevent Kroger and Albertsons from becoming more competitive, we'll make it much better for Walmart, because then they won't have to compete with Kroger Albertsons. But if we make it possible for Kroger Albertsons to merge and become more competitive, it'll make it more difficult for Walmart to control its marketplace.
I guess I would challenge that logic, because it ends up with us just having one company, right? If the only answer to, as you say, become more competitive is to become Walmart, Walmart is a quarter of the grocery market. By that logic, you could only have four grocery companies if the only answer to compete is to become Walmart. I do not think that that is the only answer for a company like Kroger, Albertsons to compete, and frankly, for smaller companies to compete. We've already seen the Safeway example is a good one. Albertson bought up Safeway. Kroger and Albertsons have bought up dozens of chains over the course of their tenure and their mm-hmm. Effort to compete, and that's just left consumers with fewer options and grocers with more ability to raise prices. I think a more competitive system is one in which the playing field is leveled for all types of retailers to have a fighting chance to reach, genuine operational efficiencies, not just being big for the sake of being powerful, you know, but finding a way to run your business more efficiently, which doesn't necessarily mean being a massive national chain. I think if you look at enforcing fair competition rules, including preventing mergers so that you don't have the end logic being that you need to be massive in order to compete, you prevent that kind of, you know, merging your way to competitiveness by enforcing the antitrust laws. You remove the incentive to be big by saying you can't just get a better price simply because you're more powerful. You have to show that you're doing business in a way that actually lowers the cost of doing business with you, and thus you deserve that discount for some real operational efficiency, not just some bullying that I have 20% of your business, so you have to give me a discount. If you remove that incentive, if you enforce merger law, and then also if you take on other things like exclusive dealing, you know, a company saying if you buy, for instance, like 80% of your pork from me, I'll give you a rebate, I'll give you a kickback. Those are things that on the supplier end can make it so certain suppliers dominate certain markets, or on the retailer end, a retailer can say, I'm going to let you, you know, be the category captain for my mayo section. I'm going to let the biggest player kind of decide who runs the shelf. There's all these other ways that we can make the market more fair. And that way you would actually see more options, more access to market for suppliers, and more opportunities for other grocers, independent grocers, cooperatives, and your big regional players like your Kroger, Albertsons, HEB, what have you, to, yeah, all offer more fair pricing and not think that the only way to succeed is to become a bully, basically, is right, to become massive.
And what has happened is that a lot of our food industry has become a few bullies. Mm-hmm. For example, four corporations now own 80% of the market for baby food, beef processing, pasta, and soda. So, using the beef processing, it used to be that almost every medium-sized town in America had a meat processing plant where farmers could bring their animals, have them processed into meat, and sell them to the community. However, with respect to consolidation, companies started coming in and buying up these community meat packing plants, and the rules start suddenly becoming much more strict as to who could do this processing. And it became more and more increasingly difficult to set up a meat processing plant. Now, farmers have only a few places to take their animals to be processed. So all of those local farmers who have a few animals to process into food have trouble doing it, because essentially four processors own the world, of 80% of the marketplace, which is pretty much the world. So, and really what made that possible in my mind was the government that supervised who could and who could not set up a processing plant by virtue of the rules that the government laid down. This is what you have to do. And it became increasingly more expensive. So forcing the economies of scale, you had to buy a bunch of plants in order to be able to afford to hire the technicians and the legal help to be able to survive the rules and regulations. And so that, to me, is why four corporations now own 80% of the marketplace. So I guess my worry is simply, if you give the government the power to manage competition, it always ends up being the big guys that win. Am I wrong?
I would disagree. I would say that We have four meat companies that control 85% of beef processing because we didn't enforce our antitrust laws and allowed, you know, Cargill to buy Montfort. We allowed Tyson to buy IBP. We allowed these major mergers to happen that in the 40s, 50s, just wouldn't have been allowed. And that is also coincidentally, or not coincidentally, the time when there was all of these regional meatpacking plants, as you described. I would argue that we had laws like the Packers and Stockyards Act on the books. We had stronger antitrust enforcement that prevented some of these massive mergers from being permitted in the first place.
What can we as consumers of food do to make our food system more fair? What can we do?
I would argue that we need to advocate for systemic change and advocate for policy change. Because it is, you know, there is only so much that can be done, I think, with voting with your dollar, so to speak. I obviously think it's important to identify genuinely independent businesses and support, you know, more regional food producers and invest in them personally. I also recognize that it's increasingly challenging. There's a lot of people who simply don't have that option because of where they live and the markets that they're operating under. And also companies make it, frankly, really hard to identify who's an independent business because they buy up, you know, all the brands that you might think is a local, different, you know, disruptive brand.
So it's going to be a tough row for us all to hoe in order to maintain some kind of fairness in our food system. Claire Kellaway, Open Markets Institute, thank you so much for joining us. Remember Michael Olson's second law of the food chain? The farther you go from the source of the food, the less control you have over what's in your food. Thank you, Claire.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.